So this morning, we're going to look at the past, present, and the future. We're going to look at the past, what we covered last season in 1 Samuel. We're going to look at the present as we begin chapter 1 of 2 Samuel. And we're going to look at the future of what we have to look forward in our study this fall. So first of all, we're going to look at the past by way of review, what we learned in our last study of 1 Samuel. We started the book, if you remember, with the lovely story of Hannah and how she prayed for her son Samuel. And we saw how he grew and became a priest and a prophet to the nation of Israel. And then later the people demanded a king, and God raised up Saul to be their first king. But unfortunately, Saul was disobedient and rebellious to the Lord's commands, and he was rejected from being king. Then in chapter 16, the Lord led Samuel to Bethlehem to anoint a young shepherd boy named David to be the future king of Israel. And David loved and worshiped the Lord. He would sit out in the fields as he took care of his sheep and worshiped the Lord and sing to him. And he was known as a man after God's own heart. And we saw how David courageously killed Goliath with a sling and a rock. And we saw how King Saul grew jealous of David. And he tried to kill him several times, which caused David to flee into the wilderness to hide from him. During this time when Saul was pursuing him, David had two opportunities to kill Saul, but he refused to touch the Lord's anointed. And then in chapter 30, the Amalekites came and burnt down David and his men's home in Ziklag, taking all of their families captive. And we see how David and his men then rescued their families with the Lord's help. We ended the book on a sad note as we learned that Saul and his sons were killed by the Philistines in battle. So this is where we pick up our study again in the present, in 2 Samuel chapter 1. Now, at this time, David did not know the results of the battle with King Saul. He had just returned from his triumph of the Amalekites when they had destroyed and burnt the city of Ziklag. And he was now waiting for the news of the battle. So David was at a crossroads. He was probably wondering, what should he do next? Should he return and rebuild Ziklag? Now David was weary. He had been fleeing from Saul for 10 years. That's a long time to be hiding in the wilderness, having an enemy constantly pursuing you, trying to kill you, trying to hide from him. He was very weary, and he probably felt uprooted. But God was preparing him for something new. And when we face times of doubt and seasons of change, it's hard, but we know that God is in control. And I can relate to David, and I'm sure a lot of you can too, of seasons of change and being at a crossroads where you feel like your life is entering a different season, or there's something happened in your life where it's different, it's changing, and you're kind of waiting on God as to what is next. This is where David was. Cyril Barber said, "Life has many such endings. Leaving home for college, the breakup of a marriage, a death in the family or of a close friend, leaving one job for another, moving to a new city or state, facing the empty nest, and having to endure a debilitating illness or an even retirement. Those are a lot of things that we go through in our life as women, and changes that happen in our life, seasons that we go through. And sometimes those seasons are hard. You know, it's hard when you get into a new season or you face something new, a crossroad in your life, and you don't know what God is going to do. And we can become discouraged, depressed when things change, but we need to trust God in times of uncertainty, to not resist, to yield, and to know that He has a plan. And God has a plan for David too, even though he's waiting. He doesn't know what's going to happen next. He's waiting to hear news about the battle, and he doesn't quite know where he's going to be or what he's going to do. So let's look at chapter 1. In verses 1 through 10, we see the messenger. 11 through 16, we see David's mourning. And 17 to 27, we see his memories. So let's read verse 1. Now it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had abode 2 days in Ziklag. It came even to pass on the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes torn and earth upon his head. And it was so when he came to David that he fell to the earth and did obeisance. And David said to him, "From where do you come?" And he said, "Out of the camp of Israel am I escaped." And David said to him, "How went the matter? I pray you tell me." And he answered, "The people are fled from the battle, and many of the people also are fallen and dead. And Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also." And David said to the young man who told him, "How do you know that Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead?" And the young man who told him said, "As I happened by chance upon Mount Gilboa, behold, Saul leaned upon his spear, and lo, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me, and I answered, 'Here I am.' And he said to me, 'Who are you?' And I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' And he said unto me again, 'Stand, I pray you, over me and slay me, for anguish is come upon me because my life is yet whole in me.' So I stood over him and slew him because I was sure that he could not live after he was fallen. And I took the crown that was upon his head and the bracelet that was on his arm and have brought them here unto my Lord." So we see the messenger that came to David. David and his men, again, are in Ziklag, 2 days recovering from the raid. And on the third day, a man who was all disheveled came panting and heaving, covered with mud and dirt, wearing torn clothes. He stumbled into the camp and he fell down on the ground before David. And the man was an Amalekite. He had come from the battle at Mount Gilboa, about 18 miles southwest of the southern tip of the Sea of Galilee, and it had taken him 3 days to get to Ziklag. And he was probably there at the battle, searching for spoils among the corpses. So David anxiously inquires about the outcome of the battle. "How went the battle? I pray you tell me." He'd been waiting to hear. The messenger tells what happens, expecting to be rewarded for his news. Now his answer that he gives conflicts with the account that we have in 1 Samuel 31:4, which says that Saul, in the battle, they were fighting the Philistines, Saul and his sons, were severely wounded. His sons were killed. Saul was severely wounded. He knew he was going to die. He didn't want the Philistines to find him still alive. So he asked his armor bearer to kill him before the Philistines could get to him. But his armor bearer refused. So Saul took the sword and fell on it, killing himself. Now the messenger's report was that Saul called out to him, to the messenger, to come slay Saul, which is what he says he did. And then he had brought Saul's crown and his bracelet to prove it. So the conflicting accounts are actually have a very simple solution. The Amalekite was lying because he was hoping to find favor and a reward from David for killing Saul. And the sad thing is that he was punished for what he said he did, even though he didn't do it. Now let's look at verse 11, David's mourning. Then David took hold of his clothes, and he tore them, and likewise all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword. And David said unto the young man who told him, "From where are you?" And he said, "I am the son of a stranger, an Amalekite." And David said to him, "How were you not afraid to stretch forth your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" And David called one of the young men and said, "Go near and fall upon him." And he smote him so that he died. And David said unto him, "Your blood be on your head, for your mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have slain the Lord's anointed.'" So the Amalekite must have been shocked seeing their reaction, because he thought that David would be happy, that they would rejoice. Saul was his enemy. You know, he'd been pursuing him for 10 years. But instead of rejoicing over the death of his enemy, David and his men tore their clothes, they mourned, they wept, and they fasted until evening. Not only was David's beloved friend Jonathan killed, but Saul as well, and all the people of Israel were slain. But David stops here to grieve before dealing with the punishment of the messenger. His enemy had fallen, but he was in no mood to celebrate. Proverbs 24:17 says, "Rejoice not when your enemy falls, and let not your heart be glad when he stumbles." Now we need to ask ourselves, how do we react when something bad happens to our enemies? Do we say, "Ah, they finally got what was coming to them"? You know, or do we sorrow as David did? Sorrow for our enemies. You know, do we love them enough to sorrow and to pray for them when something bad happens to them? And for 10 long years, Saul had been chasing David, trying to kill him, but David didn't rejoice when he died. He wept. You would think he would have been relieved to be free from Saul after all this time. But we see the heart of David, how that he wept over Saul instead of rejoicing. I don't know if I could have done that. I probably would have been rejoicing. I was free from this guy who was constantly trying to pursue me, kill me, drove me out of the land of Israel into enemy land. I was hiding in caves, you know, trying to survive. And yet now he dies, yet we see that David mourns for him. And then in verse 14, he asks the man, "How were you not afraid to destroy the Lord's anointed?" When David had the opportunity to kill Saul in the cave, you remember that? David and his men were hiding in the back of the cave, and Saul came into the cave, unbeknownst that David and his men were in the back. And David and his men said, "David, here's your opportunity to kill Saul. This is, the Lord's given you this opportunity." Yet it says that David's heart smote him, and he said, "God forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth my hand against him, seeing he's the Lord's anointed." So he just, remember, cut off a piece of his robe to just kind of show Saul that, "Hey, Saul, I had the opportunity to kill you. Here's your piece of your robe, but I didn't." And then another time, David went into Saul's camp at night with Abishai. While the camp was all asleep, and he snuck up and took Saul's spear and jug. And he had another opportunity to kill Saul. In fact, Abishai said, "Let me just take that sword and just put it right through Saul." And David said, "No," he restrained him. And again he said, "God forbid that I should stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed." And because the messenger did not spare Saul's life, David didn't spare his. Now, there's a key word throughout this chapter, and if you have taking notes, it's the word fallen. And it's in verses 4, 10, 12, 19, and 26. When Saul first started out as king, remember, he was taller than all the people. It says that he was handsome, and he was taller than all the people. He stood out. But he ended a fallen king because of his pride and his rebellion. Now let's look at memories in verses 17 to 27. And David lamented with his lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan, his son. Also, he ordered them to teach the children of Judah the use of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher. He said, "Thy glory, O Israel, is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen?" There's our word fallen again. "Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. You mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty is wily cast away, and the shield of Saul, as though he had not been anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul remained not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. You daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you with scarlet, with other delights, and put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thy high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How are the mighty fallen?" Again, the word fallen, "and the weapons of war perished." So we see that David lamented in verse 17. Now, to lament is an expression of grief, one that is written with careful words, selected, crafted, honed to express loss and convey anguish. And David didn't want them to be forgotten, so he composed a song to be taught to the children of Israel, to remember Saul and Jonathan, and to remember what happened. Now, It's really awesome to be teaching your kids, especially your little ones, songs of praise and to fill their little hearts with songs. I just get so blessed when I hear my little granddaughter singing little songs in her cute little voice about Jesus and about the Lord. It blesses my heart so much to hear that. So he taught them a song. And then in verse 18, it mentions the book of Jasher. Joshua 10:13 contains the only other reference to Jasher. And it may have been a collection of Israel's war songs, but at any rate, it is out of print and lost. So it wasn't considered to be a part of the canon of Scripture. The theme here is throughout this chapter is how are the mighty fallen? And again, that phrase, how are the mighty fallen, is repeated in verse 19, 25, and 26. This summer, we visited Washington, D.C., which I'd never been there before, and we went to Arlington Cemetery. And it was very, very sobering to ride around. We took a little tour bus and of just hills and hills, hill after hill after hill of hundreds and thousands of crosses and tombstones of so many soldiers that had been killed in battle in our country. It was very, very sobering. It reminded me of this phrase when he said, "How are the mighty fallen?" And it's something that we need to commemorate and remember all that our soldiers in the past have done for our country, for us to live in a free country. So if you ever get a chance to visit, it's very sobering, but it's really great to go there. In verse 20, David mentions the city of Gath, which is the capital of the Philistines, and Ascalon in the Gaza Strip, one of the five cities of the Philistines, which was their chief religious center. And he prayed that the place of such defeat might never be the same in verse 21. In verse 23, he highlights David and Saul's strength. He praises their lives. And David shows respect for the memory of Saul. He praised him. He spoke well of him. And the amazing thing is, he never mentions Saul's faults at all. And this is just it's so convicting to me to just think about, you know, probably if I was writing, I would have said, he was my enemy for 10 years. He was pursuing me relentlessly. He tried to kill me multiple times. He drove me into the wilderness. But all he says is good things about Saul. It's amazing, David's heart. He also says that they were swifter than eagles, stronger than lions, fierce lions. He says, Saul clothed you with scarlet and ornaments of gold, maybe describing the wealthy wives of Saul's officers and their luxurious lives. And then in verses 25 to 27, David grief for Jonathan. He says, my brother. And they were actually brother-in-laws because David had married Jonathan's sister, Michal. But they were brothers in heart and spirit. They were beloved kindred friends. Jonathan and David met the day David slew Goliath, and they became instant friends, and they remained faithful to each other through the challenges with his father. David describes his love for Jonathan as a friendship that was lasting, consistent, loyal, and faithful. And Jonathan was next to take the throne after his father. But he honored David and he wanted David to be king. He knew David was going to be the next king, and he denied his right to the throne for David. Now we look at the future, what we can expect in the study ahead. The book of Samuel continues with the story of David, David's rise to the throne, and records the history of his 40-year rule. At this time, David is 30 years old. The first 10 chapters of 2 Samuel, we see that David is made king over Judah at Hebron, and then later he is made king over all Israel at Jerusalem. And just to warn you, there's a lot of civil war in 2 Samuel, especially in the next study. But don't get discouraged, because there's a lot of great lessons that we're going to glean from these stories and from this book. In 2 Samuel, we get to know more of the man David, both his strengths and his weaknesses. We see his military victories, his patience in waiting for God's timing to make him king. He didn't force himself into the position. He used patience as he won the allegiance and the affection of the people. And even though David had a desire to do God's will, we will learn that sometimes he did it the wrong way. And the Lord sometimes said no to his ambitions, to things that he wanted to do. In chapter 11, we have the account of David's great sin with Bathsheba and the consequences that it later brings to his whole family. And then we cover David's son, his rebellion against his father, and how he created a revolt to take over the whole kingdom in chapter 15, and the heartache that it brought to David because of his sin. Another lesson in the last chapter is that David sinned in numbering the people. So to sum it up, we will learn lessons in waiting on the Lord, doing his will, accepting no for an answer, temptation, rebellious children, and pride, which all are relatable to our daily lives. So lessons that we can take heart today from this study are: when we face times of uncertainty, death of a spouse, end of a marriage, illness, retirement, old age, health failing, change or move, we can trust the Lord that it's not the end. The Lord has more in store for us, to not look back, but to look forward, to know that he has a plan for us and that our lives are in his hands. And the second thing we can learn from this study is that David only had praise for Saul. He didn't allow bitterness or have unforgiveness in his heart after all the heartache that Saul had caused him. He didn't have one negative word to say about him. And I need the Lord's help with that. I'm sure you do too, to be able to put that into practice. Now, the third thing, Saul was dead. God had promised David the kingdom. He had been anointed as a young shepherd boy many, many years back, but he was still waiting for God's timing to raise him up as the king. Wouldn't this be the time? Saul is dead. It's time for me to take over as king. But David patiently waited on the Lord's timing. He wouldn't take it by force. And we make a mistake when we think that we can help God fulfill his promises in our lives. We want to take things in control, right? As women, we can handle it. I'll fix it. I'll do it. We'll make it happen. But no, David waited patiently on the Lord. He waited for God's timing, even though he had been anointed king, even though Saul was dead. And as we continue our story next week, we'll see what God has next for David as he waits at this crossroad in his life. So let's pray.